It is June the 7th, and we are beginning Parshas Chukas, which in the Stone Chumash is on page 838. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aaron le'emor. Hashem spoke to Moshe and to Aaron, saying, Zos Chukas HaTorah, this is the Chukas HaTorah, the Chok of the Torah. Now they translate that as decree. We're going to talk about that in a moment. Asher tziva Hashem lemar, that Hashem commanded, saying, Daber al b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, v'yikhu elecha fara aduma tamima, they should take for you a red cow that is unblemished, asher ein bamum, or tamima means complete actually, asher ein bamum, that has no blemish, asher lo ala ala ha'ol, that did not have any yoke go upon it. When it says timima, complete, it means completely red. And then asherin bamum, that has no blemish, that means, as we normally understand, that an animal without a blemish. And also that it could not have a yoke on it, which means it was never worked. It was used for work, and we'll discuss that a little bit more extensively as time goes on. Now, there are many chukim in the Torah. A chok, as we know, is a type of mitzvah that the Torah commands that it is not intuitive. It is not that which we would have thought of logically. Other types of mitzvahs where you can think of a logical reason for them, they would not fall into the category of chok. So, for instance, lo sigzol, don't steal, that has logic to it, in that if you want to have a functioning society, people can't be stealing from each other. Same thing as lo sirtzach, don't murder, that also has logic to it. But many mitzvahs that we do not have logic, don't have natural logic. And they're not things that we would have thought of on our own had we been writing a book of how to behave. So examples of chukim, of mitzvahs that we would not have thought of on our own, would be, for instance, wearing tefillin. Another one would be eating kosher. Eating kosher is a chok, an example of a chok. And things of that nature. Now that does not mean that the mitzvahs that are not chukim, the ones that have a logic to them, it does not mean that those mitzvos, that their logic are the reasons why they were commanded. The reasons they were commanded is because Hashem decided to command them. We don't know for sure why Hashem commanded each mitzvah. However, some mitzvos, they fit in more logically to an objective thinker than other mitzvos. And the ones that don't fit in logically, those would be called chukim. However, here, this mitzvah of Parah Aduma, the Torah says, Zos Chukas HaTorah. This is the chok of the Torah. There are other chukim, but it seems that this one, more than any other one, epitomizes the concept of chok. This mitzvah is more of a chok than any other mitzvah. So this one, in other words, is going to defy logic. We will look at this mitzvah and say to ourselves, not only is it something we wouldn't have thought of on our own, it also seems to defy logic. Now, why would we not have thought of it on our own? Because we would have no reason to say on our own, from our own logic, that a cow that is red would have any more power to remove tumah than any other animal, that the process of this para aduma should remove tumah, that is something that we would not have considered on our own. But that doesn't defy logic, that just means it's not something we would have thought of. That doesn't make it illogical. What makes it illogical is, as the Gemara says, that the para aduma is Mitaher es hatameim, it purifies those who are impure, umetame es hatahorim, and it makes impure those who are pure. So, in other words, as we will see as we go through this parasha of Parah Aduma, that the Parah Aduma is necessary in order for certain types of people to achieve tahara, to achieve purity. But in the process of Parah Aduma, people become impure. It is impossible to go through the process of Parah Aduma without somebody becoming impure. So, I remember when I first heard this many, many, many years ago, I thought to myself, then it's a never-ending cycle. That means someone is always tamei. You can't have a situation where everybody is tahar, because the Parah Aduma is necessary to become tahar, and it always makes somebody tamei. That means there's never a time when everybody is tahar. So I didn't understand that. But that, of course, is a mistake. The type of tumah that the Parah Aduma will make a person tahar from is that of tumas mace, as we will see as we go through this parsha of Parah Aduma. So when a person becomes tameh mace, they come in contact with a dead body. That would mean a person attends a funeral, or a person does a tahara of a dead body, or any other thing that goes into a graveyard. A person becomes tamei tumas meis. When a person is tamei tumas meis, there's nothing wrong with being tamei tumas meis, unless you're a kohen, unless you're a male kohen. But if you're not a male kohen, there's nothing wrong with being tamei tumas meis. And in fact, all of us today, other than those who are kohanim, are tamei tumas meis. If you've ever been to a funeral, you are tamei tumas meis. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with being tamei tumas meis. But when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, b'mehera v'yameinu, then we will not be allowed to enter the Beis HaMikdash until we become tahar. So being tamei meis prevents one from entering the Beis HaMikdash. It also prevents one from eating kachim, from eating karbanos. So one would have to become tahar from the tumah of tumas meis. The only way for a person to become tahar from tumas meis is with the Parah Aduma. The mikvah is not good enough. Even the best type of mikvah, the mikvah of an underground spring, would not be sufficient to make a person tahar from tumas meis. One would need the ashes of the Parah Aduma. That's why today we are unable to purify ourselves from the tumah of tumas meis. And we need, therefore, the Parah Aduma. We are tamei until we have a Parah Aduma. The tumas meis that a person has is a 7-day tumah minimum, meaning that one becomes tamei and remains tamei forever until they go through the process of tahara, which includes Parah Aduma. But even when the Parah Aduma is in existence, it takes 7 days to become tahar from tumas meis. One is automatically tamei for 7 days. As we will see, those who become tamei because of processing the Parah Aduma, that tumah is not the same level as tamei meis. That tumah is a 1-day tumah, and in order to undo that tumah, to become tahar from the tumah of having been involved with the Parah Aduma, all it requires is going to the mikvah. So that's why, as I mentioned before, it is a mistake. What I asked as a young teenager, I asked to myself, and I don't understand, if the Parah Aduma makes some people tar and some people tamei, then it's a never-ending cycle, someone's always tamei. That's not true. The Parah Aduma will make people who are tamei meis tahar. In the process, there will be some people who will become tamei for a day. And they won't need the Parah Aduma to become tahar from that tumah. All they'll need is a mikvah. So that's what it means, though, that it is mitaher es hatameim. It purifies those who are tamei, but it is also mitame es hatahorim. It makes tamei those who are tahar. So that is the illogical part of Parah Aduma, of it being a chok, that how is it that the same process makes some people tahar and makes other people tamei? And that's very difficult to understand conceptually, and that is the thing that is illogical, which is why the Parah Aduma is called the chok of the Torah, even though there are other chukim, but this is the quintessential chok of the Torah. We are going to go through the parsha here so we can understand the process of Parah Aduma. It's a rather lengthy parsha, the paragraph, this first paragraph that goes on for 22 psukim. We're going to go through it so we understand how it works. There's a lot to talk about, and we probably will get to very little of that this evening, and over the next week or two have a chance to really delve into the details of Parah Aduma. This is also the parsha of Parah that is read on the Shabbos before the two Shabbosos before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. In the Dalet Parshios, in the four special Parshios that we add on before Pesach, those of Shkolim, Zohar, Parah, and Chodesh, so the Parah Aduma, this is Parah Aduma right over here. This is the one that we read. From here in Atlanta, the Parah, Parshas Parah, was the very last Shabbos that we were able to lane in an indoor minyan. It was, at that time, Parshas Kisisa and also Parshas Parah that we read on that last Shabbos before we had to close down. Now, what is the process? Before we read it in the Psukim, let's just give a general synopsis of what happens. This Parah Aduma, which has to be completely read and without any blemish, is not a karbon. That's very important to remember. It's not a karbon. A karbon has to be slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash. Its blood is caught and thrown on the Mizbeach. This is not shechted in the Beis HaMikdash. It is shechted specifically outside the Beis HaMikdash. Its blood is not, well, its blood is caught as well, but it is not, blood is not sprinkled on the Mizbeach, on the altar. As we will see, it's a completely different process. So it is not a karbon. It is easy to mistaken it for a karbon because it says it can't have a mum, it can't have a blemish, which sounds like it's a karbon, but it is not a karbon. The Parah Aduma is taken to a mountain overlooking Har HaBayis, overlooking Yerushalayim, and it is towards the east side of Yerushalayim, and the Parah Aduma is shechted there. We'll see about the blood when we read it in the Parsha. It is then cut up and burned there on that mountain, along with a few other items. And then the ashes of all those things that are burned are collected. And those ashes are what are used to make a person tahar, from Tumas Mace. The ashes are collected, and then ashes can remain in storage for a very, very long time, for years. They don't lose their potency, they can just remain as ashes. And what happens is that when a person wants to, when they want to use it to make a person tar, they take water. We'll have to discuss where that water comes from. It's not just any water. And they mix it together with some ashes of the Parah Aduma. And then that water is sprinkled on the person or the items that are being made tahar from Tumas Mes. That's the process. One Parah Aduma produces an enormous amount of ashes. And as I said, the ashes can last for years and years. Therefore, we'll discuss, not this evening, but we will discuss, hopefully we'll remember to discuss, that we know how many Parah Adumas were actually processed over the years, because there weren't that many. You don't need that many Parah Adumas for the Jewish people to function in Eretz Yisrael over the course of hundreds of years. So we'll discuss that as well. So one Parah Aduma does not use up that quickly. Moshe Rabbeinu will process a Parah Aduma. obviously not in Yerushalayim, but he will process a Parah Aduma, substituting the Mishkan for the Beis HaMikdash. So, the Pasuk tells us, let's go through more now in detail what happens. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. So you take this Parah Aduma, Unisatemo sa el Elazar ha-Kohen, you shall give it to Elazar the Kohen. Elazar was not the Kohen Gadol. Aaron was the Kohen Gadol. Elazar will eventually succeed Aaron and become the Kohen Gadol, but that won't happen until later on, actually, in Parshas Chukas. But it hasn't happened yet. Right now, Elazar is what is called the Segan Kohen Gadol. He's the second in command. And the mitzvah of Parah Aduma is Biskan, is to use not the Kohen Gadol, but the second in command. The vice Kohen Gadol, if you will. So you give the Parah Aduma to Elazar the Kohen. You shall take this Parah Aduma outside of all the camps, v'shalchat osa lifanav, and it shall be shechted before him. He doesn't actually shecht it. Someone else shechts it in front of Elazar. V'lakach Elazar ha-kohen midama be'etzba'o. Elazar takes from the blood of the Parah Aduma with his finger. That has to be his right finger, his right hand, his right finger. And he sprinkles towards the opening of the Ohel Moed, of the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash, midama, from its blood, sheva piyamim, 7 times. So he has to be standing to the east of the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash, because the doorway of the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan are on the east side. Remember that although we, when we daven, we face east, that's because we are to the west of Eretz Yisrael, so we face east. But the Beis HaMikdash faces west, and therefore the opening is on the east side, which means he has to be standing to the east of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan, and then he has to be looking towards the opening of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan, and sprinkle the blood from where he's standing towards the Beis HaMikdash / Mishkan. Of course, the blood doesn't get anywhere near the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan. He's very far away from it, but he does it in that direction. The Mishnah tells us he needs to see the opening of the Beis HaMikdash / Mishkan from where he is standing, and then he sprinkles in that direction 7 times. So the Mishnah explains to us that there was a small mountain towards the east of Yerushalayim, and the Kohen Gadol would process the Parah Aduma on that east side of the Beis HaMikdash. The eastern wall of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash was lower than all the other walls. The walls on the south, the west, and the north sides were higher than the wall on the east side. On the east side, it was a lower wall, so the Kohen standing on the mountain could look over that wall and see into the opening of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash itself was on a mountain, Har HaBayis. And when you entered the Beis HaMikdash, you entered the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, you were not on level ground. You were to get from the entrance of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. The courtyard was a very, very, very large courtyard, and there were several openings. There were several entrances into. There were on the four sides. There were a total of five entrances to Har HaBayis, to the Temple Mount. When you entered, then when you went from the entrance to the Beis HaMikdash, you would be constantly going higher up. The land, the elevation of the land would get higher as you got closer and closer to the Beis HaMikdash. So the picture it that if the Beis HaMikdash is up here on top of Har HaBayis, well, to get to the eastern wall of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, you would actually go down a little bit, a gradual decline from the mountain, until you got to the eastern wall and went out the eastern wall. That eastern wall was low enough that if you were standing on another mountain outside Yerushalayim, higher up, where you were on a level close to the level of where the entrance of the Beis HaMikdash was, you would see right over that wall, the wall wouldn't be tall enough to block one's vision. That was the idea of having that wall lower than the other walls around the Beis HaMikdash. So one could stand on that small mountain to the east of the Beis HaMikdash and look over the wall, over the eastern wall, and directly into the entrance of the Beis HaMikdash. This is what the Kohen had to do when he sprinkled the blood of the Para Aduma. Pasuk Hey, verse 5. V'saraf es ha-para le'inav, and the Para will be burned in front of the Kohen. Es ora ves v'sara ves dama, its hide and its flesh and its blood, al pirsha yisrof, along with pirsha. Pirsha means the insides of the animal. Everything gets burned up together of the Para Aduma. So the entire thing gets burned. V'lakach eitz erez. I'm sorry. Yeah. V'lakach ha-kohen eitz erez ve'ezov ushni toloas. And the Kohen will take three items. He'll take an eitz erez. He'll take a branch from a cedar tree. Ve'ezov, a hyssop. And ushni toloas. And he will take a piece of wool that has been dyed red. V'hishlich el toch srefas ha-para, and he will throw them into the burning of the Para Aduma. In that fire, the burning of the Para Aduma, he'll throw these items in, specifically these items. We will talk about later, Mitzvah Hashem, why these items. V'chibes begadav ha-kohen, the Kohen shall wash his clothing, which means put them in the mikvah. V'rachatz b'saro b'mayim, and he will immerse his flesh in water, because he will have become tameh. And then he can come to the camp. And the Kohen becomes tameh until the evening. So there is a tumah that, as we mentioned, that the Para Aduma is mitaher hatameim. It makes the tameh people tar, but it is also mitameh as hatahorim. It makes the tar people tameh. So here we have the first indication of people who become tameh, and that is the Kohen now has to his clothing become tameh, he becomes tameh. They both need to go into the mikvah. So you have now this burned Para Aduma along with the other items that were thrown in. The Pasuk tells us, Pasuk Ches, Vasarefosa, also the one who burned the Para Aduma. Not just the Kohen who was there, but also the one burning it. Yechabes Begadav Bamayim shall wash his clothing, which means go to the mikvah. V'rachatz b'sarav amayim, and immerse his flesh in water, go to the mikvah. V'tomei ha'arav, and he's tamei till evening. So it's a one-day tumah. Okay. Now then what? V'asaf ish tohar. And a tohar person will gather eis efer ha'para, the ashes of the Para Aduma. V'hiniach michutz v'machaneh b'makom tohar. He will place the ashes of the Para Aduma outside the camp in a tohar place. And it will be there for the congregation of Jewish people as a mishmeres, as a safeguard, for meinida, which is translated here as water of sprinkling. Chatashi, it is for purification. Now, the word nida is confusing, because we're familiar with the word nida to refer to a woman who is tamei. The truth is, the word nida comes from the word nud. Nud means to move. The first time we have that word in the Chumash is with Cain after he sins. It says, Nava nud yeba'aretz. He'll be moving around the land. The land would not allow him to stay in one place. He had to constantly keep moving. Nud means to move, or perhaps it means, you can use it also to mean to disturb. To move is to disturb, like Nadidashnas Hamelach, the sleep of the king Achashverosh was disturbed. So that's what it means, movement. So this is water of movement because you sprinkle it. So it's mei nidah, water that is sprinkled. That's why it's referred to as mei nidah. The word chatas also can be confusing because the word chatas often means a sin or a sin offering, but it also can mean to purify. And that's what it means here. So this, the ashes are a safeguard to be used later for mei nidah, for water of sprinkling. Chatas hi, it is for purification. V'chibes ha'osef ha'sefer ha'parah es b'gadah v'tamei ad arev. Now we have another person who became tamei. The one who gathers the parah aduma ashes should immerse his clothing in water, and he is tamei. His clothing in water, and he is tamei till evening. V'hisal livnei yisrael v'lager agar b'sucham l'chukas olam. And then this will be for the bnei yisrael and for the convert who lives among them as a chok forever. So that is what happens to the parah aduma. That's what happens to its ashes. Now what? What is it for? The Torah never told us what it's for. The Torah just told us what to do. But what is it for? So now the Torah explains. Hanogeh b'meis l'chol nefesh adam, someone who touches a dead body, v'tamei shivas yamim, he'll be tamei for 7 days. Hu yischata vo, he shall purify with it. He, the one who is tamei, shall purify with it, with the parah aduma ashes, b'yom ha'shlishi uvayom ha'shvi'i yitar. On the 3rd day and on the 7th day, he'll become tahar. The ashes have to be sprinkled on him on the 3rd and 7th days of his tumah, and then he can become tahar. V'im lo yischata v'yom ha'shlishi uvayom ha'shvi'i, if he does not purify himself on the 3rd and on the 7th days, lo yitar, he cannot become tahar. Now, the count of the 7 days do not have to start from when he became tamei. Let's take us. We may have been tamei for years with tumas meis, and Bez Hashem, the Beis HaMikdash, if it's built tomorrow, and we have a parah aduma already, so then we can begin the process of the 7-day tara right away. We don't need to, it's not that, even though it's been many years since we became tamei, it doesn't make a difference. The tara will take 7 days. On the 3rd and on the 7th days, you sprinkle the parah aduma ashes on the person. So the Torah continues to explain. Kol hanogeh b'meis b'nefesh ha'adam, anybody who touches a dead body of a soul of a person, asher yamus, that he dies, v'lo yischata, and he does not purify himself. Someone who comes in contact with a dead body and does not purify himself, and then he goes into the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan. Es Mishkan Hashem Timei, he has desecrated he's violated the Mishkan of Hashem. V'nichrasa nefesh ha'im Yisrael, this person shall get kares. He's cut off from the Jewish people. Ki meini dalo zorak alav, because the water of sprinkling was not thrown on him. Tamei yiyeh, he shall be tamei. Ode Tuma Sovo, because he still is Tamei, and he went into the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the Torah has not explained to us anything about water. All the Torah explained to us was that the ashes is sprinkled on a person, but as we mentioned in our introduction, it's really ashes mixed with water. And here it does say the phrase, Mei Nidah, water of sprinkling. What water? Who's said anything about water? So we're going to get to that soon. The Torah continues, Yudalad 14, Zos HaTorah, this is the law. Adam ki amus ba'ohel, a man shall die in a tent. Now here we find out that tumas meis, a person can contract tumas meis not only by touching a dead body, but even by being in the same ohel, in the same room as a dead body. Kol ha'boel ohel, anybody who comes to that ohel, to that tent, v'chol asher ba'ohel, anybody who's already in that tent, Yitma shivas yamim, shall become tamei for 7 days. So tumas meis a person can get tumas meis by being in the same room as the dead body. V'chol kli fasuach, and any open vessel, asher ein tamid pasil alav, that does not have a sealed lid on it, a sealed top on it, tamei hu, it is tamei. So we hear from this that there is an exception to things becoming tame if they are in the same room as a dead body. If you have a utensil that has a sealed lid, then whatever's inside will not become tame. Chazal explained that this is not talking about just any container. It's talking specifically about a kli cheres, an earthenware utensil. An earthenware utensil, I actually have an earthenware utensil right here. This is an earthenware utensil. It is a mug. So an earthenware utensil. So the way it works, normal utensils, if someone who is tameh or something that is tameh touches it, it becomes tameh. Not so with an earthenware utensil. The only way for an earthenware utensil to become tameh is for something tameh to go inside of it. It doesn't have to touch. It just has to go into the airspace of, below the rim, of the earthenware utensil, and the earthenware utensil becomes tameh. In this case, this earthenware utensil, if it's in the room with a dead body, and it has a sealed lid on it, then the earthenware utensil does not become tameh, because the outside doesn't make it tameh, only the inside does, and there's a sealed lid that prevents that tumah of the dead body from getting into inside the tameh, inside the kli cheres, the earthenware utensil. And therefore, it remains tahor, and what's inside of it remains tahor. But if it's not a sealed lid, then whatever's inside will become tameh. Of course, the Gemara deals with the question of what's called sealed in terms of a sealed lid and what is not. The Torah continues, Pasuk Tez Zayin, verse 16, V'chol ha-she'igal p'nei ha-sadeh, anything that will touch on the face of the field, b'chalal cherev, touching a dead body that was killed by the sword, over mace, or someone who just died, over etzem adam, or the bone of a dead body, over cover, or a grave, yitma shivas yamim, will be tameh for 7 days. It says that on the field, because this is talking about where there is no roof, there is no ohel, there is no tent, and a person is just in the open, doesn't have to be a field, it could be anywhere, but there's nothing over their heads, then they're only tameh if they actually come in contact with the dead body. As part of this discussion of the Parah Aduma, we will also, Bez Hashem, in ensuing weeks, discuss the way one becomes tameh tumas meis, because that's also relevant over here. It's not only how one becomes tahar from tumas meis, how does one become tameh meis in the first place? That is all derived from here. So here we have the basics. There are more details to talk about. Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. V'lokechula tameh me'afar sreifas achatas. You shall take for the person who's tameh from the ashes of the burning of this parah aduma, v'nasan alav mayim chayim el keli, and you'll place on it mayim chayim, literally means live water, el keli, into a utensil. So what happens is you take a utensil, you have the ashes of the parah aduma, and you have mayim chayim that you mix together, and that is what's going to be sprinkled on the dead, on the person who is tameh meis, or on the item that is tameh meis. What is mayim chayim? Mayim chayim is water that comes from an underground spring. Not rainwater, not tap water, not water from the ocean, not even water from a river if it's rainwater, but rather water that comes from an underground spring is mayim chayim. We require mayim chayim for the parah aduma ashes. Pasuk Yurches, verse 18, V'lakach ezov. So the one who's going to sprinkle is going to take an ezov, a hyssop. We already had an ezov before that was thrown into the fire. This is obviously a different ezov. V'taval ba'mayim ish tahar, and a tahar person will dip the ezov, will dip the hyssop into the water that is mixed with the ashes. V'hiza al ha'ohel, v'al kol ha'kelim, v'al nefashos asher hayu sham, and he will sprinkle, using that hyssop, he will sprinkle on a tent that became tameh, or on utensils that became tameh, or on people that became tameh, v'al nogea be'etzem ove'chalol v'ameis ove'akover, or someone who touched the bone of a dead body, or the corpse of a dead body, or the grave of a dead body. Anybody who touches those things needs the Parah Aduma ashes, and this hyssop will be used to sprinkle it upon them. V'hizah ha-tahar al ha-tameh, the tar person will sprinkle on the tameh person, v'yom ha-shlishi v'yom ha-shvi'i, on the third day and on the seventh day, v'chit'o v'yom ha-shvi'i, he shall make him purified on the seventh day. V'chibes b'gadav v'rachatz b'mayim v'tameh v'taher ba'arev, and he shall wash his clothing, which is put in the mikvah, and he will himself immerse in the mikvah, and he will be tar in the evening. And that process of becoming tar after Tumas Meis is complete. Someone who becomes Tameh but does not go through this process, as we mentioned before, this person will be cut off from the congregation. We'll talk about, Mirtz Hashem will hopefully remember to talk about why this is repeated. Because he defiled the Mikdash of Hashem. Meini dalo zorak alav, the waters of sprinkling were not thrown on him. Tameh hu, he is Tameh. V'aysa lahem l'chukas olam, this will be for them as a statute forever. Umazei me'ani dayechabes begadav, the one who sprinkles the waters of sprinkling will have to wash his clothing. V'anogeab me'ani dan, someone who touches the waters of sprinkling, yitma ad ha'arev, will become tameh until evening. Now, although we said before that, many people processing the Parah Aduma become tameh, the one who burns it, the Kohen who is there, the one who gathers the ashes, they all become tameh. Here, when it says one who sprinkles the Parah Aduma ashes with water on people becomes Tameh, the Gemara derives that that's not actually the case. Really, one who sprinkles remains Tar. One who carries the Parah Aduma water with the ashes from place to place, he becomes Tameh, and that's what we're talking about over here. It's the person who carries it who becomes Tameh. V'chol ha-she'iga bo ha-tameh yitma, a person who is tamei meis, if he touches somebody else, that person will also become tamei. So from here we derive that tumas meis is a higher level tumah than all other tumas. All other tumas, if you become tamei from something that is tamei, you can't make another person tamei. Let me just finish the pasuk. I'll discuss that a little bit more in depth. V'nefesh anogas titma na'arev. And then, if someone touches that person, they're tamei until the, and the one who touches is tamei till the evening. So it's like this. Normally, if a person becomes tamei from, let's say, having touched a carcass of an animal that wasn't shechted, an animal, and they become tamei, so that tumah makes the first person who touches it tamei. That first person touches a second person, that second person is tahar. That tumah cannot be transferred to another person. It can be transferred to food, but it cannot be transferred to another person. Tumas meis is different. Tumas meis, if I go to a funeral and I become tameh, then I touch another person, that other person also becomes tameh. This tumah could be transferred from person to person one time. However, there's a difference between my tumah and his tumah. My tumah that I went to the funeral is for 7 days. The person who I touched is only a 1 day tumah. So there is a difference in the tumas meis that happens whether you're the first person or second person in the chain in the process. But it still is a very stringent tumah in that it can go from person to person and go from one to the other. The second person does not need the Parah Aduma ashes to become tar. All that person needs to do is go to the mikvah, and then they will be able to become tar. There is a whole process with this water of the Parah Aduma and the ashes, which we have to discuss much more in depth in Mirtz Hashem. And again, in ensuing weeks, we will, Bez Hashem, talk about the various aspects of the Parah Aduma and its ashes. For now, we're going to end off with one last point about the Parah Aduma and the ashes. One other point. And that is that the Parah Aduma has a special rule. Because it's not a carbon, therefore, when they process the Parah Aduma, it does not need to be processed by a person who is tahar. Even though the pasuk told us a tahar person will gather the ashes, but the processing of the Parah Aduma can be done by someone who is not completely tahar. Now, what does that mean, not completely tahar? They can't be tameh, but they don't have to be completely tahar. The halacha is they could be a tevul yom. Tevul yom means a person who went to the mikvah today. Normally, when a person is tameh and they go to the mikvah today, that they are not yet completely tahar until nightfall. The sun has to go down after they go to the mikvah to be completely tahar. Now, I'm not talking here about the going to the mikvah that a woman does for family purity. That, all it requires is the mikvah. Nothing else is required. But to go to the Beis HaMikdash, if a person is tameh and they go to the mikvah, they also need the sun to go down before they are a fully tahar. Between the time that they go to the mikvah and the sun going down, they are called a tevul yom, which means someone who went to the mikvah today, but the sun didn't yet go down. That person is not able to be involved in karbanos, in sacrifices, but that person is allowed to be involved in the Parah Aduma. Why am I bringing this up? It sounds very technical. I'm bringing it up because this was a major, major, major issue between us and the Tzedukim, the infamous Tzedukim, those who rejected Torah Sheba'al Peh, who rejected the oral Torah, and only kept the Torah Shebiksav, the written Torah. They held that Parah Aduma had to be done with someone who was completely tahar. Someone who not only went to the mikvah, but also the sun went down before they could handle the Parah Aduma, before they could process the Parah Aduma. That is wrong. That is a stringency that is not true. Therefore, when they process the Parah Aduma, in order to show that the Tzedukim were wrong, they would deliberately make a Kohen Tamei. He would go to the mikvah, and then that same day, before the sun would go down, he would process the Parah Aduma. They would do that on purpose, to show that the Tzedukim are wrong, and that it is okay to handle the Parah Aduma, the processing of the Parah Aduma, with someone who is a Tevul Yom, someone who went to the mikvah today, and the sun did not yet go down. Therefore, they deliberately made him Tameh. They would take a Sheretz, for instance, a dead mouse, and they would touch it to the Kohen, so he'd become Tameh. He would then immediately go to the mikvah, and then before the sun would go down, he would process the Parah Aduma. So that is what they would do. As a result of that, because they would be acting in such a cavalier manner regarding Tumah, regarding purity with the Parah Aduma, they therefore had to offset this with a whole bunch of chumras, a whole bunch of stringencies in Tumah as well, that also apply only to Parah Aduma. So Parah Aduma has many, many rules that apply exclusively to Parah Aduma. So Mirtz Hashem, we will talk further. We have to talk, there's still a lot of details of Parah Aduma we did not cover this evening. And then, of course, we have the deeper meanings behind many and the symbolism of many of the items and many of the processes of the Parah Aduma. So Mirtz Hashem, in the ensuing weeks, we will be going over this. The paragraph we read is the Psukim of the Parah Aduma, and we'll park here for a little bit of time to really understand these Psukim as best we can. Okay, so Mirtz Hashem, we will continue next week.